You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast. This week saw the beginning of a review by the Justice Select Committee into the Freedom of Information Act, giving post-legislative scrutiny to the Act, which came into force in January 2005. In this podcast, we hear from industry experts on the strengths and weaknesses of the Act in its current form, what journalists and other parties are calling for, and assess the impact the seven-year-old legislation has had so far on journalism and local democracy. Amid concerns the effectiveness of the Act could be weakened as a result of the current review, FOI officer Paul Gibbons, known as FOI Man Online, joined a Save FOI campaign, which began life as a hashtag on Twitter and now also has a blog. He spoke to journalism.co.uk about the importance of the Act and the impact it's had in the years since it came into force.
If FOI was supposed to bring in a more transparent age, a more accountable time for public authorities, it was supposed to support public engagement. And I have to say, I think it's been very effective at that so far. That's one of the reasons why I'm reluctant to see it watered down at this stage, because organisations are more transparent and are certainly more accountable. We wouldn't have found out about MPs' expenses without FOI, even though eventually that came out through a leak. We wouldn't have found out all sorts of things without FOI being there. And there isn't a day that goes by without newspapers being full of stories which are based on an FOI request. I think the impact on public authorities is that people know that information is going to get out. So, I would think that there are a lot of decisions that might possibly have been taken before that aren't taken anymore. So it saves money in that way.
Paul added that some of the concerns raised about FOI on the part of public bodies could be tackled without changing the law.
I think it's always good for things to be reviewed. Certainly, got no problem with debate about FOI. That's always a good thing. And there are clearly issues that need to be raised. But I think certainly from my own perspective, as somebody who is an FOI officer and actually works with FOI all the time, I don't think that it's subject to some of the problems. I think a lot of the issues are exaggerated by public bodies in some cases, but I think also they have legitimate views, but I think there are other ways to answer that. So, for instance, one of the big criticisms is that we get lots of requests from members of the public asking silly requests about zombies and red pens and all this sort of thing. But I think the way to deal with that is to educate people. And until we've actually done more to actually educate people about how to use FOI effectively and really what the cost of FOI can be, then that would be the right step initially. I think actually changing the legislation is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction.
In written evidence published by the Justice Committee, some public authorities signalled their support for the introduction of charges or the lowering of cost limits on requests in a bid to deal with the issue of costs. Paul gives his response to these suggestions.
Clearly, FOI costs money. I mean, all services cost money. But I think that's the way to look at it, is FOI is part of the service that public bodies provide. It's about being accountable, and we're all paying our taxes all the time, so it's covered by that. And I think that's an important thing to bear in mind. I think we also have to look at the benefits of FOI, and clearly FOI does bring benefits. It's identified corruption in some cases, identified areas where public bodies could be more efficient. So it does save money, but often you don't see where those savings are. They're not as obvious to people. So I think any debate about how much FOI costs has to take into account the benefits that accrue from FOI, some of which aren't necessarily as obvious to people as the immediate costs of time spent on answering FOI requests.
So having heard from Paul, we spoke to members of the media to hear their views on the topic. David Higgerson is Digital Publishing Director at Trinity Mirror Regionals and regularly writes about the topic of freedom information on his blog. He will also give evidence to the committee on Tuesday and shared his thoughts with us on the current scrutiny of the Act.
The review is certainly good news because it's a very powerful tool as it is, but it does have a lot of holes in it at the moment, which makes it possible for people, should they be minded not to release information, to find a way not to release it. So at the moment, the Freedom of Information Act doesn't really enshrine the principle of your right to know so much as the right to say, your right to know, unless we can find a good reason not to tell you. So in that sense, it is very good news. The flip side to any review, of course, is it gives people who were unhappy with the introduction of FOI in 2005 the opportunity to come up with reasons why the rules should be much, much tighter, which in turn would have a serious knock-on effect for journalists and the public in general to find out what's going on at the authorities that they fund through public finances.
With the legislation placing certain rights to information not just in the hands of journalists but members of the public, I asked David about the role ordinary citizens are playing in uncovering stories.
One of the things that I've worked quite hard with our journalists to do is make sure that should they receive a Freedom of Information request or details from a Freedom of Information request which have been put in by a member of the public, is make sure that we tell people it was put in by a member of the public, because the only way we can empower more people to use the Freedom of Information Act is to show that, you know, regular members of the public who aren't journalists have also had success out of it. And certainly when I'm putting together the blog each week, there's an increasing number of stories which are clearly coming from FOI requests that have been placed by members of the public rather than journalists. I was talking to some FOI officers before Christmas, and they say generally it's a myth to say it's only journalists who submit FOI requests. And in most of the Greater Manchester Authority areas, journalists are in the minority. You then have corporate entities that are putting in FOI requests. But the majority of FOI requests are now coming from individual members of the public, sometimes about very specific issues close to them, other times because they just want to find out what's going on. So certainly we're seeing a lot more information coming out of councils to members of the public, which then appear in the paper and or online, and that's made possible through sites like What Do They Know. And as journalists, I think we should be encouraging members of the public to use the Freedom of Information Act even more.
Like Paul, David does not support the idea of introducing charging, but there are some changes he would like to see beyond the overall retention of the Act. This included, and I quote, the introduction of a statutory responsibility on public authorities to create a positive culture around freedom of information. Staying with this theme, I spoke to Jonathan Carr West, a director at the Local Government Information Unit, which works with local councils to encourage greater openness. He described the impact he has seen the FOI Act to have on the culture of public authorities.
Most FOI requests come from the media. Those that come from sort of ordinary citizens tend to involve fairly specific personal interests. So on that sense, it seems as though it's relatively marginal. But I think what's more important is the impact it's had sort of culturally within the public sector and within local authorities, which is the knowledge that anything they do can be subject to Freedom of Information requests. I think makes them think differently about how open they are, makes them be a bit more proactive about openness. And so in my view, the impact is the general sort of that's been most positive has been the general cultural shift rather than the sort of specific things that have been achieved through Freedom of Information requests. I mean, I think if you went into most councils, you wouldn't find an example of the great sort of FOI request that suddenly breaks open a massive story and you know, opens up some sort of dark bit of corruption or difficulty or misadministration. That's very, very rare. That doesn't seem to have happened much. But I think that the general principle of democracy, that it's about being open to your citizens all the time, constantly managing a dialogue with citizens, which is one of the things that we're always arguing should be done anyway, that, you know, democracy is not a once in every 4 years event. It's about constant process of engagement, consultation, involvement in decision-making. And actually, FOI is it's only a part of that, but it is a part of it. It's part of a sort of culture that says, you know, that roots power in the citizen, that says the citizen has a right to know this. It's not for the council to decide what should be revealed and what shouldn't. The default assumption is that we as citizens have a right to know. And I think that has been significant.
Another of David Higgison's suggested changes for an improved act was for a stronger information commissioner. I spoke to Steve Wood, head of policy delivery at the Information Commissioner's Office. The ICO is responsible for adjudicating on complaints that public authorities have not carried out their duties in line with the act, he said. I asked Steve how the ICO's role has developed since the Act came into force in 2005.
Over the time from sort of 2005, since the Act came into force to date, the amount of freedom of information complaints we've received has sort of has risen steadily upwards. I think in 2005, 2006, we received about 2,700 freedom of information complaints from requesters. By this year, 2011-2012, that had risen to 4,384. So the amount of casework we've received has increased steadily, and the number of decision notices we've issued has increased steadily. And over time, really, we've developed our functions and have learned the sort of the best ways to tackle poor performance in public authorities. So we have improved the way we're actually monitoring and tackling issues of delays, particularly when it comes to our attention that public authorities are regularly exceeding the 20 working day deadline, which is set out in the Act for responding to freedom of information requests. Where we get evidence that that's happening on a regular basis, we can then actually take steps to start to get more information about how that public authority is actually handling the requests, and then they may actually go on a list of public authorities we actively monitor, and then we may actually take action in terms of contacting those public authorities to actually work with them in more detail if the monitoring actually reveals a pattern of considerable concern.
He added that the ICO would not consider changes to the main structure of the Act necessary.
Our general view is that the Act is generally working well, and it's meeting a significant number of its objectives. And amendments to the core principles and the scheme of the Act aren't really necessary. So we're really thinking about the Act as generally working well, but there may be a few sort of limited amendments which could be made to the Act to improve it in certain areas. The main areas where we see the Act could be improved would be by making internal reviews mandatory, which currently isn't in the legislation, which can lead to delays for requesters, and also adding a time limit for the consideration of the public interest test, which can currently be extended for a long period of time by some public authorities.
I asked what the ICO's response would be to calls such as that of David Higgison, that the ICO needs to play a stronger role.
I think our view is that we generally actually have the powers in the legislation to be able to take the right form of action. I think in terms of actually resolving complaints, our actual performance has improved sort of considerably in the last 2 to 3 years. And one of the concerns raised a few years ago was the delay that some complainants were receiving, the amount of time it was taking the ICO to actually get to complaints when they were actually made to us. But the time profile of our cases has now considerably improved, and we're getting close to the point now where we're generally resolving 90% of all freedom of information cases within 6 months, which is a picture which is far better than 2 or 3 years ago. So hopefully, sort of the service we're offering is improving as well, and we're getting more agile, I think, to quickly intervene in certain cases where it's clear that certain public authorities haven't provided a response at all to a complainant, and that happens sometimes where they've significantly exceeded the 20 days, but we will quickly intervene now in some of those cases to issue a decision notice, which basically then sets out to the public authority that they must issue a refusal notice in respect to that case or disclose the information. They can no longer just maintain a position of silence. So they've either got to formally refuse it, so the complainant has got something they can then appeal, or disclose the information. So we're intervening in the earlier stages of those types of complaints when they come to us, which we're able to do now because we're more on top of our general caseload.
One regular user of the Freedom of Information Act is Paul Francis, political editor of the Kent Messenger Group. He explains how he most often uses the Act to uncover stories.
Like most journalists, FOI is now an incredibly useful and productive tool in the weaponry at our disposal. And again, like a lot of journalists, I use it quite regularly, probably submitting one or two requests each week to different public bodies. As a local journalist, I would say that most of my requests are probably directed towards organisations like local councils, NHS trusts, police forces, rather more than central government. That's not to say we don't use FOI to get information from central governments, but the general focus of our requests tends to be those bodies which kind of are doing things at a much more local level.
One issue he raised with the current situation was that of time.
Well, I think there is an issue about the time in which it can involve journalists pursuing requests, and that's often because requests are refused and you have to go through the appeals process, and also because under the legislation public bodies have 20 working days in which to respond. So all the time that you're working on your kind of everyday diary stuff, FOI is not a good way in some senses in which to turn around stories quickly. It is a more time-consuming process. Set against that, I would say that obviously it's a way in which you can get to stories which are kind of probably often more contentious and interesting than some of the routine diary stuff that journalists have to cover. So the timing is an issue, partly because the rules which say the public bodies have 20 days to respond, and also because if your request is refused, then you have to go through the appeals process, which again is another potentially time-consuming bit of the activity. And there are a number of opportunities in which to pursue your claims, it's quite common for journalists sometimes to kind of lose interest in their request the longer time goes on.
Paul added that while he had no problem with the review, there are concerns within the media about potential changes, and not just calls for charges, that could be put forward as a result.
Well, I think any legislation has its imperfections, and there's always ways in which legislation might be improved. So I don't have a problem with a review of the legislation. I think where I and others have concerns is whether this review will lead to a kind of chilling effect on the legislation and make it more difficult for journalists and citizens to access information, because we're seeing quite a heavy lobby from public bodies who are expressing concerns about the time and resources they have to devote to FOI, dealing with vexatious requests, and are floating ideas like a charging regime where requesters would have to pay some kind of levy or fee for information, possibly at an appeal stage, possibly at the outset of making a request. And all the evidence that exists where fees have been introduced to FOI laws elsewhere is that it does have a detrimental effect in terms of the number of people accessing their rights to know. So that's an area where I do have some concerns about the MP's review.
So there'll be plenty of eyes on the Justice Select Committee as it continues its review of the FOI Act. You can find out more about the committee's scrutiny on the Parliament website. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.